And we're beginning Masechta Nazir. So Nazir is a type of neder, which is one reason, as we'll see in the Gemara, why this Masechta comes, not really one reason, it's the reason why this Masechta comes after Nedarim. In some ways, then, what we're going to learn in this Masechta is going to be similar to what we learned in Nedarim. We're going to start talking about Kinuyim and Yodos, as we did at the beginning of Nazir of Nedarim. We're going to talk about, for example, the fact that a woman makes a neder of Nazir, so her father or her husband can be made for it, just as we've been learning in the last two Krakim of Nedarim, and other things like that, where Nazir is like any other neder in that sense. Mostly, of course, we're going to focus on the dinim that are unique to a Nazir, the various things that he's also to do. He's also, we know, to eat or drink any grape products, to cut his hair, to become tummy mess. So all of those are going to be discussed later in the Masechta, the details, all the ins and outs of those. Eventually, what happens is, a Nazir, there's two sets of korbanos that he might have to bring. If he becomes tummy anytime during his Nazirus, then he brings three korbanos, two birds for an oila and a chatas, and a sheep for a ram, rather. A sheep for an osham. Then in most cases he starts the Nazirus over again. We're going to discuss those details later on in the Masechta, when he has to start over, when not. When he finally finishes his Nazirus, in order to be finished with his Nazirus, he has to do certain things. He has to bring three korbanos. He has to shave, and he has to bring three korbanos. All three of them are animals: an oila, a shlomim, and a chatas. So those are the kinds of things we're going to be talking about in the Masechta, and we're going to be talking, for example, towards the end of the Masechta, a lot about the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. In the middle of the Masechta, we're going to deal with an issue that's very important in Kashrus, the concept of tam ke'ikar, that the taste of something is like the substance of the something. We learn that from a Nazir, because the Pasuk says that a Nazir not only is not allowed to eat grape products, the expression of the Pasuk is Mishras Anovim, anything even that grapes were soaked in, he's not allowed, meaning that they have a flavor of grapes and he's not allowed to eat. So we're going to be discussing that point. And there are different other things that come up throughout the Masechta we're going to be discussing, but those are some of the fundamentals. One thing about Nazir, like Nedarim, the Lashon of it is different. We often have the Rishonim talk about that the Lashonis in Nedarim in Nazir, just like in Nedarim, are different in some places. Also, we have that also like in Nedarim, the Pirush that we have printed in place of Rashi is almost certainly not from Rashi. Some say that maybe the core of it is from Rashi and then somebody else added to it later, but they think that maybe it's from Yehuda bar Nosson, one of the sons-in-law of Rashi. And in fact, on the side of many pages in the Masechta, we're going to have notes on Rashi that are called Nuschas Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Rabbeinu Nosson. So, in other words, like there are two different versions of this Pirush from the Rivon, the one that's printed in the Pnim and the one that's sometimes printed on the side. But because of all of that, the main pirushim on Nazir usually are the Rosh, which is printed on the side, and Tosfos. Tosfos in this in Nazir, somewhat like in Nedarim, is not just dealing with advanced topics like they do in the rest of Shas. They also deal with Poshet Pshat, somewhat like the Ran did in Nedarim. So we will occasionally quote the Pirush printed under Rashi's name. The Beis Yosef calls it the Mefarish, but again, most of the time we'll be referring to the Rosh and the Tosfos.
Is there any history like where Rashi was?
So there are Rishonim who bring a Pirush of Rashi on this Masechta. So it's possible that Rashi wrote some kind of Pirush to it. Maybe he didn't have a chance to finish it, and therefore the Rivon or whoever had to write something more. And there's different other possibilities. They talk about who the author of the Pirush is. But anyway, uh, it, it may be that Rashi wrote, but he didn't have a chance to complete it. It might be like he only started writing the first draft or something. Rashi also only lived to 65 years old, so there may have been many things that he wanted to write, and then unfortunately he didn't have a chance to.
The Rambam was a doctor.
Okay, so first we're going to start out with things that are fairly similar to what we learned in Nedarim. The Mishnah says, Kol Kinuyin Nezirus. Now, we learned in Nedarim that you have Yodos and you have Kinuyin. You have yodos, which is when a person makes a partial declaration of a neder, and we fill in the rest to say that it's considered that it constitutes a full neder. And then we have kinuyim, which is when a person uses a word which is not quite the word neder or koinam or nazir, but nevertheless we consider it the equivalent of that. We had back in Nedarim, we had the concept of kinuyim. We had a number of things. For example, instead of korban, you would have koinam or koinach or whatever. And we had Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish discussing over there, are these words from other languages that people use instead of the word korban, or are these terms that the Chachamim themselves invented? Because we learned over there that if a person uses the word korban, they may say korban l'Hashem. And even more so, they may say Lashem Korban, and then conceivably a person could say Lashem and die on the spot and have been Motzi Shem Shemayim Levatola. And therefore, the Chacham wanted to discourage people from using the word Korban. And therefore, they came, therefore, according to that opinion, according to Rabbi Yechon, and then they came up with these terms.
To say Korban Lashem, it would be saying Hashem's name from
the... So no, if you say Korban Lashem, and then you're saying that this is a neder, that this thing is also as a Korban Lashem, that would be fine. But if a person says Lashem Korban, and then first he says Lashem, and then he never has a chance to say the word Korban, yeah. So in a similar vein, then there are kinuyim when it comes to nazir. Again, are we talking about that these words come from different other languages, or are we talking about that these are words that the Chachamim invented in order to discourage people from saying the word nazir? Again, because then they'd say nazir l'Hashem, and they might say l'Hashem nazir, and so forth. Yeah. So kol kinuyim nazirus, kinazirus, all the kinuyim, if a person accepts on himself nazirus, with any of these kinuyim, then that works and he's considered a nazir. But first the Mishnah brings an example, not of a kinuy, but rather of a yad. We had something similar at the beginning of Nedarim, where it said kol kinuyim nedarim kinedarim, but then we started mentioning yodos, which are a partial statement. So here the Mishnah gives an example of such a partial statement.
One stronger than the other, is the yad stronger than the
other? It's not really that one's stronger than the other. No, each one is in its own way, kind of, yeah. So the Mishnah says, Ha'omer Ehei, if a person says, I will be, Harei's a Nazir, then he's a Nazir. We're going to see in the Gemara that, now how can the word I will be Nazirus? So we're going to see in the Gemara that we're talking about that a Nazir is passing in front of him, and therefore a Nazir is walking in front of him when he says this word Ehei, and therefore that means that he's accepting on himself that I will be like that person, in other words. So that would be an example. So that would be an example of a Yad. A yad literally means a handle, so it means, in other words, that yeah, it's like you're grabbing a hold of a handle of a keli and you pick it up. You pick up the whole keli with it. The same way here, he's saying a partial statement, and it ends up meaning the whole statement. Another example would be if he says ehei noe, I will be beautiful. And again, we're going to see in the Gemara that we're talking about that we can see that the circumstances are that he's saying that I'll be beautiful in terms of Nazirus. In other words, that I'll grow my hair long and beautiful the way a Nazir does.
A Nazir does it with its
kadaf. Eventually, a Nazir shaves off his hair.
Right, but that's what it's afterwards. A Nazir doesn't cut his hair, it makes him look opposite from you.
Maybe. So then the point is, when he cuts his hair, he becomes beautiful. Could be. So we're going to have that story actually in a couple of blats, but the story of the Bachar who came to Shimon HaTzadik, but actually there it was the other way around. Shimon HaTzadik tells him, do you realize that now when you cut off this hair, you're going to not look so beautiful as you did before? And the guy tells him that just the opposite, I was growing my hair with Hashem Shemayim. So apparently the idea is, as long as he's growing his hair, he's called beautiful. Then he shaves it off, he's bald, so now he's not so noy. Anyway, so then also Nazir, so then also that makes him a Nazir. And we'll see in the Gemara why it doesn't just say, if he says Ehei or Ehei Noah, Harei's a Nazir, why does it repeat the word Nazir? Why does it say, if he says Ehei, then he's a Nazir, Harei's a Nazir, or Ehei Noah, then he's a Nazir, why not just say them all together? There is, by the way, a different explanation. One of the Rishonim who wrote a Pirush on Nozir is called Rav Avraham Min Ahar. He also wrote on Nedarim. We quoted him sporadically here and there. Anyway, he says the word Nozir is actually part of his declaration. Ehei Noah Nozir, I will be a beautiful Nozir. So then that means that he's a Nozir.
That's very simple.
So then, yeah, but the point is, in other words, that you shouldn't think that maybe it means I'm only going to be beautiful like a Nozir and not an actual Nozir. No, we say it's a Yad and he's a Nozir. Now comes Kinuyim. According to the first explanation, the word Nozir is not actually, the Mishnah is not saying that he's a Nozir. It's giving it as an introduction to the next list. Now that we said Yodis, now that we mentioned Ehei or Ehei Noah, which are Yodis, now the Mishnah is going to mention the various ones that are Kinuyim. And so it starts by introducing them with the word Nozir, which is, of course, not a Kinuy. That's the actual word. So Nozir, Nozik, Naziach, Haziach, if he says any of these things, he says Nozir, or he says Nozik, Naziach, Haziach, any of those, Hareza Nozir, then also he is a Nozir. Because all of those are Kinuyim. So again, we said that according to Rabbi Yochanan, these are all words from Goyish languages that mean Nozir, and therefore a person says them, then it makes him a Nozir. And according to Rish Lakish, these are terms that the Chachamim themselves invented so that a person doesn't say Lashem. Which then, in that case, Tosfos points out over here what we also discussed at the beginning of Nedarim. So in that case, why does the Mishnah have to give a list of chlal? Let it just say that person says with any kinui of Nazirus, then he's a Nazir. It wouldn't, according to the opinion that these are words from foreign languages, that wouldn't apply only to these three words. The same thing would be, for example, if a person said in English, I'm a Nazirite, or the same thing if a person said the equivalent word in French or in whatever other language. So why bother mentioning it all? So Tosfos says actually that what it means is if a person were to make a neder of Nazirus with one of these Lashonis, even if he doesn't mean to become a Nazir, nevertheless, he's still, that would make him a Nazir. Because with other words from other languages, in other words, he'd have to know what he's saying, but over here not. And the idea would be because these words are so similar to the words in Lashon Kodesh, then therefore that would be a reason to say that if he doesn't know what he's talking about, okay, you need piva libo shavin. But in other words, here where he's making one of these declarations, he may not fully understand that those are the equivalent of the word nazir, but nevertheless, they still are considered that equivalent. One point is, in other words, that. Because these words are so similar to the word Nazir in Hebrew, then therefore they have that power, as opposed to, again, similar words that you might use in other languages that are not really related to the word Nazir at all, then those we'd say that he has to actually know what he's saying. So the Mishnah continues. By the way, as far as these words, there is someplace else where Rashi or the Mefarish or whatever explains that actually graphically, if you take, for example, the word Nazir, so the Resh at the end of it, if you put another line in it, then you have a Kuf. That's where they got the word Nazir. You extend out a line from the bottom of it, you get a ches, and then you have Noziach and so forth. So like each one of them graphically can be very closely related to the word Nozir. Could also be really, you know, I mean, you have some, you know how some people pronounce a reish back in their throat. So maybe, for example, a person says Nozir, then, you know, it can sound very similar to the ches of Noziach and so forth with the other ones. Anyway, Hareni Kozeh. Another example. This is back to Yodos. Suppose a person says, I will be like this one. So he sees a Nazir walking in front of him, and he says, I will be a Nazir. There are in fact Rishonim who learn that wouldn't even be a Yad. That would actually be a full fledged Neder of Nazirus, because he sees the guy walking in front of him and saying, I will be like that. Yeah.
The reason why they're going back and forth.
So why are we going back and forth? So the Tosfos says that So Tosfos says, only because he says kozeh, only because he says kozeh. Now, if there was a nazir walking in front of him and he said, hareini, I will be, then that's not enough. Because a hey is a stronger lotion of I will be than hareini. Hareini really means more like I am. A hey means I will be. So if he just sees the guy walking by and he says, hareini, I am, then that's not really enough to make him a nazir.
Well, that's what he had in mind.
Even if he had in mind, there still has to be a nusach. I mean, after all, a person can't make nazirus in his mind. So if he just says hareini, in other words, that wouldn't be enough. So the Mishnah is saying, hareini kozeh, to stress the point that he has to add the word kozeh. On the other hand, earlier when he said ehei, then that would be enough even without saying kozeh, because ehei means I will be, and the implication therefore is I will be like that person who's walking by. Another example, he says hareini mesalsel. So he said, if he says I will curl, I literally mesalsel means to like to play around with my hair. A misalsa literally means like to turn it over and over. There's a pasuk in Mishlei, for example, that says salsaleho sremimecha, turn over and then investigate and keep on looking over and over the Torah or sremimecha, and it will make you greater. So the word south, there's in fact a Gemara in a couple of places where it says that the Talmidim of Rebbe did not know what this word misalsa means in our Mishnah. That in their times, they weren't speaking Lashon Kodesh as much anymore, so they weren't familiar with the term. Rashi says it, but they didn't have Rashi yet. This is 1,000 years before Rashi. No, it doesn't say the word Masalsa in Chumash. So, Rashi mentioned that Yosef was Masalsa beside it, but yeah. Anyway, so then the Gemara says, one day they heard Rebbe's maidservant, she saw a guy who was playing around with curling and then whatever, and then playing and then dealing with his hair, and she said, "New, how long are you going to be Masalsa with your hair?" And then they realized what Masalsa means. So now he says hareini mesalsel. So then that also means. So what does it mean? It means I'm going to grow my hair long for nazirus, and therefore that makes him a nazir as well. Tosfos points out then to that, and that's not really a yad anymore, because again we should have listed it together with the yad. This is really a complete statement. He just didn't say clearly the word nazirus. So it's stronger than a yad. When he said a hey before, that was a yad, because he didn't actually say I will be what. We have to fill in, because we see a nazir walking by, then it means that he'll be a nazir. When it comes to mesalsel, the mechalkel, the next one in the Mishnah, then we're going to see in the Gemara that all he needs to be doing is holding on to his hair at the time. So it's not really as much of a yad; it's more of a complete statement. So hareini mesalsel, hareini mechalkel. Similarly, if he says hareini mechalkel, which also the word kilkel, we're going to end up explaining in the Gemara, also refers to growing hair long. Or if he says I'm obligated to make my hair grow long, which again is the growing the hair long of the nazir. So all of those harei is a nazir. So in all of those cases, he's a nazir. So again, so far we've had yodos. We've had kinuyim, and we've had things that are more than yodos that actually amount to full declarations of nazirus. There's maybe one tiny little bit missing. He didn't actually say the word nazir, but nevertheless, it's clear that that's what he meant. What about harei alait sipodim? What if he sees a nazir coming passing by, and he says, "I am obligating myself to bring birds as a korban." Now, the fact is, we said when a nazir becomes tameh, then he has to bring two birds plus a sheep as a korban. So does that constitute?
But at the end also he brings it.
No, at the end he brings, that's what we were saying before. At the end, the nazir brings three korbanos, but there's two different sets of three korbanos. If he becomes tomei, then he brings two birds, one for an ola and one for a chatas, and a sheep for an osham. And if he, when he finishes his nazir successfully, then he brings three animals. One is an ola, one is a chatas, and one is a shlomim. So
with the birds also?
Then there's no birds. Then it's only animals. So now he sees a nazir coming by and he says, "I am obligating myself to bring birds." So does that imply that he's saying that I'll be a nazir and should I become tameh, then I'll have to bring birds as part of my korban? Or does it not mean that? Rameir says that's enough to make him a nazir. Bacham ain't a nazir. Bacham say he's not a nazir because that's not a lashon of nazir.
Breaking his nazir.
No, well, the fact is, I mean, it's not. It may be a yad, but it's not a yad mechiyach. At any rate, it's not. So, Rameyer figures that he's saying, in effect, what he's saying is, if I should become Tomei, then I'm going to have to bring two birds. Well, that amounts to taking on the full thing of Nazirus. But the Chachamim are disagreeing and saying, come on, that's not a lotion of taking on Nazirus. So the Gemara starts off. Let's first talk about the order of the Masechtos. Mechti Tana b'Seder Noshim Koi. Now let's consider. The Tana is in, say, we're in the middle of Seder Noshim. We had Yevamos, Ksubos, we had Nedarim, now we have Nozir, and we have yet to go Sota, Gittin, and Kedushin. The Gemara did not ask the same thing at the beginning of Nedarim because at least Tosfos says it's a little more understandable in the Pasuk. Most of the focus on Nedarim is on the Nedarim of a daughter that her father can be mefer, or of a wife that a husband can be mefer. So therefore, there's a certain logic to it going in Seder Noshim. But now the Gemara is bothered by why Masechta Nozir is in why Masechta Nozir isn't Seder Noshim. So it's not so much no, because a woman can be a Nozir as well. But the question really is, the Rosh and Tosfos discuss, given the fact that a Nozir has to bring korbanos, maybe Masechta Nozir ought to belong more in Seder Kodshi. Why is it Bechlal in Seder Noshim? Nedarim, in other words, you can understand. There's a certain logic to it. But why is Nozir particularly in Seder Kodshim? Why is it not elsewhere? So my time a ton of Nozir. So why is the Mishnah then, why is the Tana then at this point teaching us Masechta Nozir? So the answer is Tana Akrokoi. The answer is the Tana is basing himself on a pasuk. You have the Pasuk says regarding divorce, if a wife does not find favor in her husband's eyes, because he found in her a matter of erva, so then he divorces her. So now we have like this. So there's a progression right here. Me goram soita. So let's consider, in other words, So we're going to have, after Nozir, we're going to have Masechta Sota. And after Sota, we have Gittin. Because what happens is, if she acts that way, then the husband is very likely to want to divorce her. So so we start like this. Mi goram lola avera. What is it that may have caused her to get into such an avera in the first place, to be mizana, such that she would be a Sota, and such that eventually there may be Gittin, that her husband divorces her. Yayin, that was all caused by drinking too much wine. Well, Kamar, so therefore we're saying, Kola Roya Sota Bakokola, a person who sees a Sota and her degradation, Yazir Atzmi in a Yayin, he should make himself a Nazir to not drink wine, realizing what that can bring a person to. So, in other words, so Tosfos points out two things. So it's, first of all, we're saying that a woman herself would do well to stay away from wine. We learned back in Ksubas that about the bad effects that wine can have on a woman. So really, in other words, that so she should be restricting herself with wine even without a nether. Then on top of that, we're saying that somebody who sees what happens to the Sota himself would do well to become a Nazir. So therefore, so now Nozir comes in over here as the beginning of this progression from Nozir to Sota, and from Sota to Gittin. Now Tosfos also adds like this. What the Gemara is asking is that now back in Nedarim, we also discussed the question. The Gemara didn't discuss it over there, but we discussed it outside of why it is that Nedarim comes after Ksubas. And the reason was, the Gemara actually tells us at the beginning of Sota, the reason is because in Ksubas, you have a perek over there that talks about Hamadiris Ishtoi, where a man puts his wife under a neder. And we talk about how long the various kinds of Nedarim, how long can they be in effect before it's an intolerable situation and we require him to divorce her, et cetera, et cetera. So that led us to Masechta Nedarim. And then Nozir, after all, is a type of neder. So therefore, it goes together. Tosfos says, here the Gemara is not doing that, because here the Gemara is bothered by Bechlal. Why is Nozir even in the Seder? Why is it not in Seder Kodshim? Once we establish that it has reason to be in, that it has reason to be in Seder Noshim, then we can talk about the order of things, and we can say that that's why Nozir comes before Sota, which in turn comes before Gittin, because of the reason that we're saying over here in the Gemara. So you need both. In other words, first you need a justification for why it's in the Seder in the first place. Once you have it in Seder, once it's established, it needs to be in Seder Nashim, then the next thing is, why are they in the order that they are? Why are the Masechtas placed in the order that they are? Which is a progression that we're saying over here. One point is, there's a vote on this. We're saying kola roya soita b'kukula. We know the famous thing, and that's mentioned in many places in Chassidus, that when the Eibishter causes that you see something, then it's meant for you particularly to take a hit off from it. Otherwise, the thing could have happened without you seeing it. So therefore, particularly, this person is roya soita b'kukula. Therefore, he has more reason than others to be yazir atzmi min ayayin, and realizing that this is the Eibishter is giving him a message, essentially.
In those days, drinking wine was a regular thing.
Right, in those times, drinking wine was a regular thing. But now we're saying that maybe for a while he should go to the other extreme, realizing what it can cause. Yeah. So that's the reason why Nazir is in the Seder, and that's why it's in the order, and that's why it's in the order that it's in. Next, the Gemara asks, Posach b'kinuyin mafarish yodis. So what happened? The Mishnah started kol kinuyin nizirus kinizirus, but then instead of explaining kinuyim first, it started mentioning yodis, because we said ehei or ehei nor is a yad of nedarim rather than a kinuyim. So why is it doing that? If it started saying kol kinuyin nizirus kinizirus, the next thing is it should be saying that if he says nozik noziach paziach. Why is it first mentioning yodis? So the Gemara answers, Amar Rava, v'itema kedi. So Rava says, or some say kedi. Now there are places where Rashi explains that kedi is the name of a chacham. So in other words, Rava said, or some say kedi said. The other possibility that many Rishonim say is the word kedi means anonymous. It's short actually for kedihi, as it is. So we have a statement that was said as is, and we don't know who said it. So according to that, it would mean that some people said that Rava said this. Others said, we don't know if Rava said this. As far as we know, it's anonymous. Anyway, so he answers, Chsuri Mechsera, like we had in Nedarim, the Mishnah is missing words. It means to say, Kol Kinuya Nizirus Kinizirus, V'yodis Nizirus Kinizirus, and in addition, also Yodis are just like Nizirus, the Elohim Yodis. And then what is the definition of Yodis? Oimer, Ehei, Harei's a Nazir. For example, he says Ehei, then he becomes a Nazir. So you're right. So the way we have the Mishnah in front of us, then it's not so clear, but we add in the fact that the Mishnah wanted to talk about Yodis as well.
So which words are missing?
So the words are missing, V'yodis nedarim k'nedarim. So the Mishnah had said, kol kinuyin, not nedarim, nizirus. Kol kinuyin nizirus k'nizirus. The Mishnah should have added, the Tana should have added also, V'yodis nizirus k'nizirus. And then what's an example of a yad is a hey or a hey noah. But instead, the Mishnah left out those words, figuring that we can fill them in ourselves. So the Gemara asks, in that case, v'lifrish kinuya bereisha. Well, in that case, since it said kol kinuya nizirus kinizirus first, then why doesn't it explain kinuyim first? Why, according to what you're saying, it says kinuyim, then it should have said yodis, then it starts describing yodis, and only then does it go back to kinuyim. Why would it do that? And the answer is, as we had in Nedarim, that sometimes the Tana, after the where he left off with in the list, is where he starts explaining from. We talk about it then. It's a they call it a chiastic structure. Chiastic means like an X-ray. So you mention A, then B, so then you start to cross over and you explain B first, and then you explain A.
That's left off.
So therefore, so the Mishnah would be doing that. Kiditnan, as we have an example, Masechta Shabbos. But we have a few examples. The second parak of Shabbos begins. What are you allowed to light Shabbos candles with and whatnot? Various kinds of oils and wicks with wicks that don't burn well, oils that don't burn well, and therefore there's the concern that you may adjust the flame on Shabbos, which would be over on a malacha. Umafarish ain madlikin bereisha, and first it starts listing the ones that you don't light with. Similarly, a couple of prakim later on Shabbos, what are you allowed to insulate a dish with on Shabbos, a pot of food to keep it hot? What are you allowed to use, what not? So you have, the Gemara explains over there that the Chachamim made a rule that even on Erev Shabbos, you can't use something that's moisif hevel, that adds heat to the food, because then the Chachamim were concerned, one of the things you might use for that purpose is ashes that have live coals in them, and then you're going to move them around on Shabbos and cause the coals to burn brighter and be over on the Malacha of Mavir. So therefore, they made the rule that even on Erev Shabbos, you can't use something that's moistif hevel, that adds heat, only something that's only something that preserves the existing heat of the pot. Anyway, so it says that Mufarish ain't termed in Bredesha. And first, it starts listing all the things that you're not allowed to do Hatmana with. Similarly, the sixth parak of that Masechta begins by Me Isha Yotza, by Me Eni Yotza. On Shabbos, what is a woman allowed to wear outdoors in terms of jewelry or accessories or what have you and whatnot, where we have various things. You have things that were concerned she may take off and carry them. You have things that she may show off to her friends, things that may easily slip off, things that she may be embarrassed of, et cetera, et cetera. So you have all those, and first it starts listing the things that she's not allowed to. So we see that very often a Tana will do that and do that chiastic structure. The Gemara asks, but what about, here's an opposite example. In that same Masechta of Shabbos, the fifth parak begins, the Mishnah starts describing what kind of equipment or gear or whatever is an animal allowed to go out with on Shabbos and whatnot. The point being that it explains over there, if you have gear that's needed for guarding the animal so it doesn't run away, then that's valid, but it can't be more than what that kind of animal needs. And it can't be less, something that won't be effective anyway. And then there's various other things, various kinds of accessories and things like that are not really needed for the animal. So the animal, of course, itself is not mechuyev in mitzvah Shabbos, but you, the owner of it, are mechuyev in shvisas behemtoy. And so that includes this.
Like walking out with on your rings.
So for example, you have for example, it mentions over there. Let's say yes. So you have at the end of the parak. For example, it mentions over there that a cow is not allowed to go out with a strap tied between its horns, Ben Azalia allowed his neighbor to do that and got in trouble for it and everything. Yes. So you have examples of because that kind of thing is only for decoration. It's not really needed for guarding the animal or anything. Yeah. Or doesn't do anything practical for the animal yet. Anyway, so there you have and first it starts listing the things that an animal can go out with. It starts listing that a camel can wear such and such a nose ring, for example, when it goes out on Shabbos, because a nose ring would be the normal way by which you control a camel. Actually, that's a particular kind of camel over there. Whatever. The point is that a knocker, it says over there, a female camel, whatever. The point is that the Mishnah starts by listing the kind of gear that an animal is allowed to go out with on Shabbos. Another example, Yesh Neuchelun Manchilin. You have a Mishnah at the beginning of the eighth parak of Bava Basra that says the following are able to inherit and able to bequeath their property to others. A normal case, for example, a father was able to inherit back when he inherited from his father or his uncle or whatever, and then he's able to bequeath it to his sons when the time comes. Neuchelin v'loy manchilin. Then you have relationships where they can inherit, but they can't bequeath. The manchilin v'loy neuchelin, and the other way around, you have neuchelin and manchilin means that you have it's a bi-directional thing. For example, a father with his sons, let's say a father can inherit from his a son can inherit from his father, and a father can inherit from his sons. If the son died while the father was alive, then the son then in some cases the father yarshins him. Yeah, if the son himself had sons, then they yaushin. But if he doesn't, then the nachla goes back to his father. So if he doesn't have children, bechlal anyway. Then you have neuchlin v'loy manchilin. You have ones where they can inherit, but they can't bequeath it. So in other words, it's only a one directional thing. For example, a woman has property. If she passes away, her sons inherit it. But the reverse is not true. If they die while she's alive, she does not inherit them. Instead, it goes to their children or their father, as the case may be, or their brothers, as the case may be. Yeah.
So they can acknowledge that the children could yashin her, but she can't yashin them.
But she can't yashin them. That's neuchlin v'loy manchilin, right? Or that's actually manchilin v'loy neuchlin, but whatever. Neuchlin v'loy manchilin. So yeah, you have ones who can inherit but don't bequeath. So yeah, like for example, a son to his mother, he inherits from her, she doesn't inherit from him. Vice versa, manchilin v'loy neuchlin. You have ones where it's the other way around. They bequeath it to the other one, but the other one doesn't, but they don't inherit it from the other one. So that would be the other way around. For example, again, the mother is manchil, but she's not neuchil. and loy neuchelin v'loy manchilin, and then you have ones which don't inherit from one from another and don't bequeath one to the other. The Mishnah mentions all four of those possibilities. And one example is, let's say, maternal brothers, people who share only the same mother but not the same father. They don't inherit from each other, and they don't bequeath to each other. So if one of them passes away, the nachla goes to his children if he has, and if not, then it goes to his father. So the half brothers have nothing in it because they don't come from that father. Anyway, the point is, so the Mishnah mentions all of that, and then Omafarish Elam Neuchlin Manchil Bereisha. First it starts explaining Neuchlin Manchilin. So we see that not always does the Tana do things in the opposite order. Sometimes he says A, then B, then explains A, then explains B. So why in our Mishnah would he not do that?
Even though he brought down a lot of cases,
But the question still is. So the question still is, why doubtful would the Tana pick to do it this way? In other words, the Gemara at this point is assuming, as we had in Nedarim, that you're not going to have the. If a Tana is going to leave out words in a Mishnah, then it's not going to be the beginning words. He might leave out words in the middle, but not at the beginning. So we can't assume necessarily that the Tana meant to say Yodais and left that out, and said Kol Kinuyin Nezirus Kinezirus, and then starts discussing Yodis. But the question is, so why Takanat? Why did he not say the words Kol Yodis Nezirus Kinezirus, and then Kol Kinuyin Nezirus Kinezirus, and then start explaining Yodis, just as we have in some places where he does that A then B then A then B, and we see that there are places where the Tana does that. So my answer is Elo Olam Tani Hachi V'Tani Hachi. You're right. In fact, sometimes the Tana will do it one way and sometimes the other way. Ella, Hosam de Isura de Nafshe, Hu Mefarish. The difference is that there the Mishnah is listing a thing that is an Isur on a person. So in the case, for example, of the second and fourth and sixth parak of Shabbos, where we have Bamei Mablikin, Bamei Terminin, and so forth, the Isser is on the person. So these are things that depend on a mice that the person did. Therefore, Mepharish Isser in Nafshe Bereisha, therefore it first explains the Isser that's on him. Gabi Behema, but when it comes to an animal, the Isura Aidi Behema, who the Isser in a certain sense is on the animal, the Isura Aidi Behema, who the Os. The issue comes about through the animal carrying such and such. The person is not necessarily doing this. He's not necessarily doing the issue. He's mitzvah. He's told not to allow his animal to carry such gear, but nevertheless, it's not his mice directly. Therefore, mefarish hateta bereisha. So therefore, it mentions the heter first.
And what does the heter that do?
So that, in other words, so first it mentions the things that the animal is allowed to carry. Okay. Yeah. And Gabi Yesh Neuchlin Nami. And when it comes to Yesh Neuchlin, Mefarish Iker Nachla Bereisha, since the purpose of that parak is to talk about the concept of Nachla, all the dinim of Yerusha, so therefore, and the main thing is, we're father to a son, so therefore, first it mentions the basic example, which are the basic concept of Nachla, so therefore it mentions the father first. So in other words, you could say that in the cases where the Mishnah is doing A, then B, then A, then B, it has a specific reason for doing that. Because it's not an issue that's directly on the person himself, or because the whole subject of the parak is Yerusha, and therefore it makes more sense to start out with the basic dinim of Yerusha.
That explains our Mishnah.
But that explains, so that would explain the Mishnayis, where it does it in that order. We still have it, we're still bothered by in our Mishnah, why in our Mishnah there's no Isser or Heter involved, so therefore, well, I mean, there are Issurim involved, but there's no particular advantage to Yodis over Kinuyim or vice versa. So why did the Mishnah choose that reverse order? By the way, in Nedarim, we also had a point. The Gemara made a point over there that at least when it comes to Yesh Neuchlin and Manchilin, the vort was it wasn't just two things. There were four different possibilities that the Mishnah mentioned over there. So it's one thing. All the other examples we're bringing over here are things. There's two. It's a binary thing, this or that. Whereas over there we have four different possibilities. So therefore, having listed all the four possibilities, it makes sense to start with the first one because otherwise it would be confusing. Anyway. Ela Hocha, so rather the Gemara says, no, but over here, the question still is lifrish kinuya b'reisha. The question is, there's no particular advantage to in our Mishnah to doing the yodis before the kinuyim. So why do that? Why not do the kinuyim first? Why not taka do having said kinuyim and then you're filling in that the Mishnah mentioned yodis? Then taka let the Mishnah begin with kinuyim and then explain yodis. Let it do A then B then A then B. Why is it doing A B B A? Yeah. So the question can be, in other words, still, why is the Mishnah doing that? The question can also be that the Gemara is assuming that a kinui in a way is stronger than a yad, in the sense that after all, a yad, we have to fill in something. A kinui is, that's just another word in another language, or a word that the Chum invented that means nazir. So in a way, kinuyim are stronger, so it should start with those. I mean, as a practical matter, both of them make a person a nazir, of course, but nevertheless, a kinui is kind of a stronger thing in the sense that it's more directly a declaration of nazirus.
Like, for instance, which word?
Well, for example, let's say a person says nazir or naziach. So that word itself, it means nazir in a different language or in the terminology that the Chum invented or whatever, as opposed to the word itself, as opposed to when he says hey, we were saying we have to fill in the fact that he means nazir. So therefore, the question is, so the Tosfos HaRosh explains the question to be that the Gemara should have started, that the Mishnah should have started with kinuyim. And the answer is, so the answer is, Ela Hainu Tam. So no, rather the reason is, Yodos Hoyov Asyan Lemid Drosha, because since Yodos we learn from a Drosha of a Pasuk, we learned back in Nedarim, that when you have the words in connection with a nazir, in fact, when it says ish ki yafli lindo neder nazir lahazir lahashem, and it says lindo ned, when it says nazir lahazir, so we learn from that the concept of yodos, the concept that not only does he have to say, not only can it be that he says the full declaration, I will be a nazir, but even he says something that amounts to that I will be a nazir. We had a whole thing about it at the beginning of Nedarim. So therefore, from that we learn the pasuk doesn't say I will be, but the point is the fact that the pasuk phrases it that it says, the fact that it says ish ki yafli lindo nedo nazir lahazir lahashem, and from those extra words in the pasuk we learn the concept of yodos. So hoyov asim lemidrasha chavivin le. Therefore, they're more precious to the Tana, and therefore he wants to start mentioning them first, more than things that are. In other words, to when a person says nozik or naziach, and he becomes a nazir, it's less of a chiddush. It's more obvious from the psukim. Obviously, we would imagine that a person could become a nazir in any language. So there's no real chiddush in it. The concept of yodis, though, the fact that a yad should work, that we shouldn't just say, he said, hey, okay, big deal. The fact that we say that has significance, that we're learning from the drosha of the pasuk. And therefore, the Tana wanted to explain those first, because it's more precious to him. Now the Rosh also refers to that the Rosh also refers to the Gemara in the Nedarim over there, where it pointed out that in that case, we do end up saying, in fact, the Gemara actually ends up saying over there that in fact the word Yodos should have been mentioned first in the Mishnah, even though we said before that it's hard to do that. It's hard to say that a Tana should leave out words at the beginning, but nevertheless, we ended up saying because on that grounds, if Yodos are so precious, then yes, they should have been mentioned first. It should have said Kol Yodos Nizirus Nizirus, and Kinuyim are like Nizirus, but instead he left out those words. He just mentioned Kinuyim, but then when it comes to explaining them, he mentioned Yodos first, which means that after all, according to that, the Mishnah does end up coming out to be in an A-B-A-B sequence. First Yodos, which the Mishnah did not actually say the word Yodos, the Tana left it out, then Kinuyim, then it explains Yodos, and then it explains Kinuyim. There the Gemara actually went through that. Here the Gemara is just keeping it brief and not mentioning that point. So that's the Gemara asks, the liftach behind Bereisha. So in that case, then why does the Mishnah begin with the word Yodos before Kinuyim? And the answer is Tanaki Maskel Maskel Be'ikur Korban, because when the Tana is beginning, he's beginning with something more obvious. So therefore, he starts with the main Loshen by which a Nazir becomes Chayiv in a Korban. Ultimately, again, at the end of his Nazirus, he has to bring a Korban. So therefore, sort of Tana starts out with that. Well, in Pirushi, but when he starts explaining the details of the dinim, Mefarish Yodis Bereisha, then because Yodis are more precious because they're learned from a drasha, then therefore he starts explaining them first. So in other words, so actually all Gemara is ending up saying that in fact it is ABBA. First kinuyim, because that's more the ikar of nazirus. Again, the same way as nazir in Hebrew, the same way as nazik in any language, in whatever language it comes from. But then when it comes to explaining, then he's explaining yodis first. So then we'd have ABBA, first kinuyim, then yodis, then explaining yodis because they're more precious, and then because they're learned from a derosha, and then kinuyim. On the other hand, the rosh is referring to the Gemara in Nedarim that says that actually it may be that the Mishnah is in fact an ABAB order. And what it is instead of, not only is the word Yodis left out, but it was meant to be at the beginning of the Mishnah, and then it was left off entirely. So then, in other words, it should have said Yodis, it didn't, we're filling that in. Then it said Kinuyim, then we're learning. Then we're explaining Yodis, then we're explaining Kinuyim. So according to that, the first mention, the mention of Yodis itself actually comes first, because again, since it comes from a Drasha. So that Gemara versus our Gemara are taking opposite views on the order of the Mishnah. Okay. Next, the Gemara says, "Ha'omer ehei harezim nazir." So we said that if a person says ehei, then I will be a nazir. So the question is, how do we know the word ehei means that I will be a nazir? Dioma ehei b'tainis kamar. Maybe all he means is he says I'm going to accept on myself a fast. The answer is Amar Shmuel going to show you nazir over lefano. The case would be that there was a nazir walking by in front of him, and therefore, when he says hey, then it means that I'm going to be like him. And the Rosh points out, in other words, the question was so the question now we learned in Nedarim the concept of stam nazirus lahokel, that if we have a suffix, whether what a person said constitutes nazirus, then we have to be makel on it. And the reason for that is because since a nazir has to bring korbanos, we can't have him bring us korbanos because of a suffix. You in general, there's certain kinds of korbanos. We learned towards the end of Nedarim, there's a bird korbanos you can bring with suffix, but animal korbanos generally not. So how is he going to bring his how is he going to bring his chatas or his osham or his whatever if he's not definitely chayav in it? So therefore the Gemara is asking that since at most we have a suffix, but a suffix is not enough to make him a nazir and to make him bring korbanos, where eventually eventually it could be chulin ba'azar. So Omar Shmuel could show you nazir over the front of. So again, Shmuel answers that we're talking about that a nazir was walking in front of him. Well, the Gemara asks, Lema Kasava Shmuel, does that mean, since Shmuel had to understand the Mishnah that way, that Shmuel would say, Yadayim She'en Mechichas, Loi Havin Yadayim, that when you have Yadayim, which are not certain, which are, it's not 100% clear that he means to accept Nazirus. So in other words, it's more likely that he means Nazirus, but we can't definitely say 100% for sure. So Shmuel apparently holds loy having yadayim, that such a thing is not considered valid yadayim. So only because a nazir is walking in front of him is that enough to make it yadayim mechichas. Because in other words, Tosfos says that if he held that yadayim she'en mechichas are good enough, then Shmuel doesn't even need to say that a nazir is walking in front of him. Even if not, the word ehei is at least a yad. And the point is, Tosfos says like this: if he meant that let's consider the word ehei means something that could take effect right this moment. Now, if he says ehei b'tainis, it wouldn't because we're already talking about during the daytime. When is this tainis going to start? Only tomorrow. So therefore, we have more reason to say that ehei could be accepting nazirus, which can take effect right the second, rather than a hey, which is only going to take effect at most, rather than betinus, which is going to be a few hours from now.
Tinus could be a few hours or
no. So what it is a tiny, it has to be before you take on a tinus, you have to accept it. Right? You have to, there's a special nusach that you say in mincha the day before to accept the tinus on yourself. Now you can actually have, the Gemara discusses in tinus, you can have a situation where a person for whatever reason has not eaten that day yet, and he decides, you know what, as long as I haven't eaten, I may as well accept the rest of the day as the tainus. But still, he has to accept it beforehand. So now when he says a hey, and we're saying it could mean nazirus or it could mean tainus, well, if it means tainus, that's only going to take effect later after he is actually properly makabel it. As opposed to if he means nazir, it's going to take effect right away. So if Shmuel held that yadayim she'en mechichas are good and that itself constitutes nazirus, then we wouldn't need that a nazir is walking in front of him. We would say, well, let's consider which one is it more likely to be, nazirus or tainus, and we would end up saying that it means, we would end up saying that it means nazirus. Because again, because that's something that can take effect right the second. And he said, hey, which implies something that that could happen right now. The Rosh points out a different point that the word ahei also implies that I am going to make myself into someone called by a different name. Until now, it's called a regular person. Now we call them nazir. So therefore, the word ahei all by itself maybe should be we should have reason to say that it means I will be a nazir. Yet Shmuel is telling us that it only works if a nazir is going in front of us. In front of him, that shows that Shmuel holds that it's not just enough to have Yadayim She'en Mechichas, you have to have Yadayim Mechichas. It has to be that there was somebody walking by over there where it's clear now that his word ahei means I will be a Nazir. So does that mean that Shmuel necessarily holds that? So the answer is Amri. So the Chum answered, not necessarily. Bizman, what it is Bizman She Nazir over the fun of when a Nazir is walking in front of him, lekel sapuka b'mil sa'achrina, then there's no possible suffix that he could possibly mean something else, so therefore it works as a yad. Avol, vadai, but definitely, or actually, Hagos Habach takes out the word vadai, ein nozir over the fun of, if the nozir is not actually walking in front of him, amrinan, we have to say, dilma ahei b'tainis gomer, conceivably, he might mean that I'm going to accept the tainis, So therefore, again, we can't say on that grounds that he should be a nazir because we can say for sure that it means that it means nazirus. In other words, maybe yes, Shmuel would hold yadayim she'en mechichas usually would be good enough. So what we would say is, fakir, when the nazir is going in front of him, maybe that's considered yadayim she'en mechichas. The fact is, he didn't say the word nazir; he only said a hey because the nazir is walking by. But it's more mechiach than it means nazirus than tainus. But if it's 50-50, if there's no nazir walking in front of him, where yes, we could say on the basis that we said before that a hey means a nazir, but there's also a very strong reason to say that it means a tainus, then conceivably it could mean that, and therefore that's not enough to make him a nazir. So in other words, what we're saying is there's two possible ways of understanding it. We could say that saying a hey when a nazir is going by is yadayim mechichos, and that's what the Gemara asked in its question, that apparently Shmuel holds that you need yadayim mechichos, and the answer is we're saying no, it could conceivably be yadayim she'en mechichos, but the point is if no nazir was walking by, it's not even that. It's a 50-50 chance whether he meant nazirus or tainus, where at least if a nazir was walking by, then we can say now it becomes, let's say, 60-40. So now it's at least a little more inclined to the side of Nazir.
We could ask him
what he meant, but actually, so what?
You forget.
No, well, one possibility is, again, first of all, you need that Nazirus. There does have to be an actual declaration. You know, if a person were to say, if a person were to say I am without a nazir walking by, for example, that doesn't make him a nazir, even though he had in mind nazirus, because he actually has to express something that's going to be nazirus. So now the question is what he expressed enough to be a declaration of nazirus? So it's not just a matter of asking him what he meant. There has to actually be something that he said that would amount to that.
You have to repeat something.
So the Gemara asks, still, even if a nazir is walking by, the duma la potum in kobonosav karma, maybe all he means is, hey, I will be the one to pater this nazir from his korbanos. Again, a nazir at the end of his nazirus has to bring three korbanos. That can be very expensive. Three animals cost a lot of money. So you can have, we're going to talk about such concepts later on in the Masechta, that you can have a person volunteers to bring somebody else's, to pay for somebody else's korbanos. So maybe that's all he means. And the Gemara answers, "Ihochi my lememer." In that case, then what's the chiddush? Obviously, then he'd be chayev to do that. The Gemara answers, "Still, ma udetame a piv v'lib ba'in and piv v'lib shavin." So the Gemara says, "No, because if it weren't for the Mishnah, you would think maybe you do have to have that his mouth and his mind are in sync. In other words, maybe what he thinks he has to actually express in his mouth. So maybe it's true that he said a hey and he has in mind to be a Nazir, but he didn't actually say the word Nazir. Maybe that's not enough. Therefore, Kamash Malan, therefore the Mishnah is telling us, nevertheless, that is enough. The fact that the Nazir was walking in front of him and he says, hey, that is considered Piv Libay Shavin. We now have that his mind and his heart are considered enough in sync that now his declaration of Nazirus is a valid Nazirus.
Or yes, Nefer's Gabon.
So that's what we're saying. We thought that maybe we asked that maybe it could mean, you know what? I think I left out a few words in the Gemara over here that makes the key. The Duma Lepotrim and Kobinos of Ka'omar, and the answer is to Ka'omar Belibo. The answer is that he's thinking in his mind when he says, hey, that he does not mean he's going to bring the other guy's Kobanos. He means he's thinking that I will be a Nazir. And the question is, Yachem Ayla Memra, in that case, then what's the Chiddush? And the answer is, maybe you would think it's not enough for him to think I'm going to be a Nazir and to say the word, hey, he actually needs to say the word Nazir, Kamash Malan, and that would be the Chiddush of the Mishnah. So it's true. Of course, if he were to take on a Nedir to pay for somebody else's Korbanos, he has to do that. But here we're talking about that it's not just when he sees the Nazir walking by and says, hey, so two things have happened. He said the word, hey, and he's thinking in his mind, that means I want to be a Nazir. So the combination of those two things is enough to be considered Piv Libay Shavin, and therefore now he is Chayiv in Nazirus. Right. As opposed to if he had said hey, without that thought that I will be a Nazir, then we'd say that yes, at most what that means is he's volunteering to pay for the other guy's korbanos.
Also, the first case sounds like also Mechichas. It's showing he sees another going by, so showing that he...
Well, that's what we said. That's what we said, that the first the Gemara assumed that to see a Nazir going by and say, hey, would be a daim mechichas. Then the Gemara said, maybe not necessarily, maybe it's a daim she'en mechichas, whereas saying a hey without a Nazir walking by wouldn't even be that. That's the thing. We said there are two possibilities. Shmuel could hold yadayim she'in mechichas are not valid yadayim. It needs to be mechichas. And the Nazir walking by makes it mechichas. Or the other side, the way we said, not necessarily. Shmuel could conceivably hold that yadayim she'in mechichas are yadayim. But we would say that when the Nazir walks by, that makes it yadayim she'in mechichas, where without the Nazir walking by, it wouldn't even be that. So there's two possible ways of understanding Shmuel. Wouldn't even be a daim mechichas because you could say it's a 50-50 chance whether he meant Nazirus or Tainus.
Oh.
Yeah. But now we're saying now that we've discussed that, now the Gemara was saying that maybe he means something having to do with Nazirus. Forget about Tainus. But maybe he doesn't mean to become a Nazir, but rather pay for the other guy's Nazirus, but to pay for the other guy's Korbanus. And the answer was that was saying that he's thinking in his heart that he plans to. And the fact that he's thinking in his heart, I am going to be a Nazir, and he says the word hey, and we have a Nazir walking by, the combination of all those factors is enough to make him a Nazir, even though he did not say the word Nazir. That would be the Chiddush of the Mishnah.
That you would be considered, you would have to repeat it and say, I'm a Nazir.
Right. Okay.
Good. Perfectly.